Welcome back to The Signal. I'm Andy Bienstock. What place does poetry have in this fast-paced modern world? If you ask Michael Ball, he'll tell you that poetry is vital, an essential element of human existence. Ball is a poet and founder of the IE Reading Series, a literary event that brings both locally and nationally acclaimed poets to Baltimore once a month. He joined The Signal's Lisa Morgan in the studio recently to talk about the series, and he brought along Lauren Bender and Justin Sirois, both of whom are fixtures in the local poetry scene and whose work has been featured in the series.
Well, Michael, Justin, and Lauren, welcome to The Signal.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So can you describe the IE Reading Series for me?
The IE Reading Series began in April of 2005. It's a reading series that is devoted to contemporary, experimental, and avant-garde poetry and poetics. And it's very much a collaborative reading series, bringing in poets and reading series from D.C., Philly, New York, North Carolina. And the series focuses primarily on poets from all over the country coming here to read with local poets. And that's the focus of it.
So each reading, you'll have some local poets and then a guest poet from out of town?
Most of the time, yes. Sometimes we have readers that are all local, but normally not. Normally it's out-of-towners with local people.
So what do you think of Baltimore as a poetry scene? I mean, would you say that there's a pretty vibrant scene here for poetry?
It's vibrant and utterly vital and very much influential to a lot of poets working throughout their late 20s to their late 50s and early 60s all across the Eastern Seaboard and even on the West Coast.
And we were kind of talking about that before we came over today, about what kind of sets the Baltimore poetic scene apart from other cities. And we kind of agree that it is a collaborative feeling that the series has and that the poetic scene in Baltimore has. And I think that's due a lot to the interdisciplinary nature of the arts in Baltimore.
It's interesting. All three of us come from visual art backgrounds. I was a painter most of the time I lived in New York City. I think a lot of the people here, like Jamie Garin Perez as well, and a lot of folks in D.C., have visual art backgrounds and have gravitated towards the language arts.
So you have people from other disciplines working in poetry, but you also have people collaborating within the different artistic scenes in Baltimore. It really does seem like that happens all the time, rather than people, you know, saying, this is my work, my individual work, and I'm having a show, my show, here is me, you know. That seems kind of nice. It seems like a lot of good ideas come from collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, how do you all feel as poets about performing your work? Is that something you enjoy doing? And how, well, it's a two-part question. Is it something you enjoy doing, and does it make the work different for you?
I hate it, Lisa.
I'm with you. I mean, I stay behind my radio machine, so.
I mean, I hate this microphone right now.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah. But do you enjoy performing, Lauren?
I think conceptually I enjoy performing. I don't really enjoy the feeling of being in front of a lot of people, but for me, I come from like a more performative background, and so it's an important part of my writing. And it kind of does inform the things that I write. Like, I'm usually thinking of kind of a site-specific performance when I start writing. So it is important to me that be incorporated somehow, and the kind of nuanced differences between performing a text or reading it is really important to me conceptually. And I think to a lot of people writing at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you, like Bonnie Jones, Lauren is an extraordinary performer. And she's a performance artist as well as being a poet and a visual artist as well. And she brings that to every reading. And we never know what to expect from her. But she does not just get up like most poets do and just open a book or a file and read and stand there. She is literally performing. And it's truly an extraordinary experience.
Lots of props.
Lots of props. Mm-hmm. Lots of antics. Fireworks as well. Yes.
Well, I mean, even just from something as cliched an example as Dylan Thomas. Hearing mm-hmm. Dylan Thomas read Dylan Thomas's poetry is a much more powerful way to experience that work than just me reading it off the page.
Sure.
You know, there's some poetry, and I would imagine as writers, you write something and you know what it sounds like to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good thing to share that with people the way you want it to be heard rather than how they might hear it in their own head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important. I think that, you know, hearing someone read, sometimes you're really surprised and the work just expands. It has so many more nuances and meanings than you would expect beforehand. Then there's other poets whose work is so highly formal that if you haven't read them before, you're going to have a real difficult time wading through their stuff if they're reading in a dry, monotone type way. Personally, I really enjoy reading publicly because I read differently aloud than I would silently on the page, rhythmically and everything else. And I end up learning about the structure of the poems that I've written by reading them aloud, whether I'm reading them aloud alone or in front of someone. But I think it's different for everyone. I think it's a different experience for each poet.
Are there sort of like rock stars of the poetry
yes.
scene? I mean, is it like a real scene, like around the country? Is there, you know, people that you just think, wow, these people are really
sure.
Yeah,
it.
Absolutely. I mean, and there are older poets, and most of them come from the so-called language poetry movement. And we have had those so-called rock stars read here. And through doing that and through their support of all of us younger poets and artists, they've really put the IE Reading Series on the national map. It is now a venue to come and read, whether you live in San Francisco or New York or North Carolina or Texas. It's a place to come and read, like D.C. or New York now.
So are there a lot of people that are out and go on the road to support their books, just like an author
would? Of course,
would?
Of course, yeah. And they do it at their own expense. And there's no money to be made from it. You end up spending a lot of money, you know, at your own expense, these poets coming from New York or whatnot. And
That was going to be my next question.
Oh, yeah.
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 So it seems, I mean, so it's all really a labor of love. I mean, and people take it to
an
extreme.
Completely. Yeah. Completely.
Well, why do you think that is? I mean, why do people work so hard to do this? And why is it important for other people to hear it?
They're absolutely nuts. I don't know.
Look around this table.
Yeah, exactly.
But you all seem so nice, you know. But I mean, really, there's got to be that burning desire. I mean, sometimes people join a rock band because they want to be in a rock band and they want to meet girls. You know, like it's as simple as
that.
And they want to be rich and famous.
Yeah.
But like most poets don't ever get to be really rich and famous.
Oh, that's why Justin got into it.
Yeah. I could tell. I could tell.
No, I think it's just because you love doing it, you know, and it's so nice to find a community of people who also love doing the same thing. And I think most, like, I know I just kind of stumbled into people who are now my best friends from doing this.
And like I said earlier, you know, it is a labor of love. I mean, every one of these people don't make a living off writing poetry or publishing poetry or running reading series. They do it at their own expense, and they all have to pay the rent doing something else. So, I mean, I consider my day job, you know, that's my hobby.
Mm-hmm.
When I get home from work, you know, that's when my real work begins.
Well, I noticed all of you, being poets, brought a little work with you. Would you like to share some of your work with us?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. I know, Justin, you're dying to do so.
I'm going first. Should I go first?
Yeah, go first.
Yeah, go first.
Okay, let me get it over with.
Okay.
I sent this to my friend Buck Downs, and he really liked it. And I didn't like it at first, but now I do, because he likes it. Boredom voucher. Put your great music on me. Struggle to be gentle in everything I do. Fail and the failure's okay. I do this better than most things I don't. My right hand agrees with my left only half the time. Had that one block between us that we really couldn't talk apart, a mouth too sinewy to down, or just rough enough to ruin the me in you. I run and run without looking for your car. The grass is taller when I come home from the airport, and the cat punishes me for leaving him for days with only public radio for conversation. He learns so much about Medicare reform and wine tasting notes and a revealing biography about Einstein. He is an entirely different animal now. Woman at the expensive airport bar savoring your mediocre Chardonnay, take your heavy music off. Tell me why you don't want to go home, and I'll tell you why I can't wait. I was going to warn you that there was a public radio reference
in
there.
We love public radio.
Yeah.
Our cats all love public radio.
Yeah.
We all have cats and they all listen to it all day.
How many,
seriously.
How many cats do we have total?
I have one.
Two.
Well,
two together.
And I have two, but in my house there are eight.
We have 10 cats.
We have 10 cats.
Have 10
and
cats.
They all listen to YPR.
Lauren, you next?
Sure. I'm going to read from a book that my friend Adam Robinson, who's also in Baltimore, just put out, but it's actually a book of poems that I read at Michael's series last year. But I'll just read a piece. Every whale is driven to pasture with a blow. Every war mostly stems from, a problem with language. Every bed has with it a softness, making it hard to sleep. In the model, there are thermoplastics, enzymes competing for your attention, for your impression upon other bloggers. Let's hope that nasty case of antiquity doesn't flare up. There will necessarily be parts missing. In the model, there is a large feline. There is also an aspect of devastating melancholy. One is only slightly bigger than the other. So rare, this common channel. Reach down to touch the manta ray. Reach in to tailor your ambiguity, your true capacity for parsing revelation, textures underfoot, but not big from little, the chaff from the grain. Oh, the houses this sight has seen. Oh, the scene of this house against that sea. The time is the present, the place is ancient Greece. The why is desperation and bending back. The day is a game and a sieve, cobbled ashore with small corrections, for the thing itself to crumble through, a sieve patched with sand.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'd like to read a poem by the poet Rod Smith, who runs the Bridge Street Books reading series in D.C. and who has advised me and supported this series and is ultimately a major part of it. And this is from his selected poems that just came out from the University of Iowa Press called Deed. And the title of this poem is Identity is the Cause of Warts. I have a toad. Its name is Boober. Boober the toad. Boober raises rabbits. The rabbits live in a big can named Big Can or Rabbit Can. Mostly they complain. Boober bangs the lid for them to calm down. It doesn't work. At the last annual convening of the International Monetary Fund, Boober spoke to a packed house about toad stuff. He talked it up good, and the bangers banged their lids. And sometimes Boober and me smoke pot. Other times, usually while hanging and banging, Boober has a twitch of sympathy, but always for himself. And he calls the phone, and it says anything. So he bangs on it, too, and I feel sorry for it and hang around with all these other things in the room wondering about this banging toad in my life. Boober gets a by-gosh, by-golly expression, which on a toad looks like all their other expressions. But that toad will sing, "Little girl, I don't work in no candy kitchen, nah, and I don't sell no chewing gum. Do any of you folks have toads? Can you help me through my toad difficulties? Sometimes I lie asleep all night. I just can't take it anywhere anymore. Sometimes I think I should get a frog instead, but my friend Jiggs Casey has a frog, and he built a nuclear weapon with it, and I'd really appreciate it if you wouldn't call me anymore." That's Rod. Rod Smith. He's brilliant.
Well, Michael, Justin, and Lauren, thank you very much for joining us today on The Signal.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having
us. It's been an honor.
Michael Ball is the founder of the IE Reading Series. Lauren Bender and Justin Sirois are his frequent collaborators and occasional performers. The next IE reading is this Saturday, December 1st, at 8 p.m. at the Carriage House, located at 2225 Hargrove Street in Baltimore's Mount Vernon neighborhood. For a link to the series website, visit signalradio.org. For The Signal, I'm Lisa Morgan,